Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you here with us. And, of course, who is that? Michael Jackson. On this day in 1987, Michael Jackson started his two-week run at number one on the U.S. singles chart with Bad. So we celebrate the late, great Michael Jackson. So there was an interesting article in The Atlantic. And the article was by a woman named Alana Samuels. And can homeless people move into Baltimore's abandoned houses? Well, we have some of the usual suspects in the studio here who have come to talk about that, who were also interviewed for this article. We did talk to folks at the Department of Housing here in Baltimore. The commissioner couldn't make it, and they also, at this point, couldn't find anybody to come in to comment, but would want us to know what we wanted to talk about, and maybe they could come with us next time. So we're sorry we did attempt to bring in the city to talk about this. I will continue to attempt that. But we are here now with Jeff Singer, the founder and former executive director of Healthcare for the Homeless, now teaching at the Maryland School of Social Work, Tony Simmons, a housing advocate, a member of Housing Our Neighbors, who experienced homelessness for a long time and is a veteran of the Gulf War. We are here with Rachel Cutler, who is a leadership organizer with the United Workers Housing Campaign and a member of Housing Our Neighbors, and good to see the three of you here.
Thank you.
And you all can join us here, 410-319-8888. Email your thoughts to talk@steinershow.org, tweet at Mark Steiner, comment on Mark Steiner Show Facebook page, 410-319-8888 is the number here. I mean, here's a basic question I want to ask you all. We're going to define homelessness in a different way, I think, than just people in the street. But we have all these abandoned houses in Baltimore. Some of them are in miserable shape and need to go. But many of them are not in miserable shape and could have people in them. And so what is a creative way? How do we use the money we have to change the nature of the system? Can we do that? Since what's the percentage of the houses, those houses that are abandoned, that are actually owned by the city, is what, 40%, 50%, 60%?
Yeah, in the survey that we've been doing in McKeldry Park and CARE in East Baltimore, it's been about 27%, about 30% of the homes.
That are owned by the city.
Owned by the city.
It sounds like it sounds relatively simple to say, just move poor people in to the houses that are abandoned. But what's the reality of that? I mean, the people say, A, how much it costs. We've had this discussion before with you, Jeff, and with other folks about how much it costs to rehab a house, and that those costs just don't work, that they had to be turned over to developers to rebuild neighborhoods and create to bring the 10,000 new people into Baltimore. So what is the alternative? There is one.
Well, if you look at the cost of what it's like to keep a person in a shelter, if you look at the cost of what it takes for a homeless person who needs health care and living on the street, if you have no income, what other option do they have but to move into a vacant? Do you live underneath a bridge, or are you living on a porch somewhere? You're living in an unsafe environment. Vacants at least put a roof over your head. It's not an ideal situation, but right now the city is not leaving the homeless population no alternative but to squat. Sleeping on the street, even though we have to win, the cold weather is approaching. So what other alternatives do we have? 1,000 vouchers that they're putting out right now, it's not even going to scratch the surface. And right now there's no programs or policies to house the homeless, the most vulnerable of our population. So what other alternative do they have but to squat?
But Jeff, I really want to push here is but what is the alternative? I mean, and how do we get to this alternative? I mean, I've said this over and over again. I use the same story I used the other day, and because emblematic to me, because some of us who've lived here our whole lives, you know, I left for a while. Remember the neighborhoods that existed in the 60s and 70s in Baltimore when the houses we're talking about were full of people. These were whole blocks. Poor working people, they were whole blocks full of people. And as Eddie Conway said as he came out of prison, one of the things that shocked him the most was driving down North Avenue and other neighborhoods that he used to go live in, and it looked like a war zone, looked like Dresden after a bombing, was his response. So is it as simple to say we can just move people in?
Almost.
All right, go ahead. Why?
Well, rather than sort of a nitroglycerin kind of bomb or a nuclear kind of bomb, it was a financial capitalist kind of bomb.
Right.
But we're in control of our destinies. You've heard me say that many times. And of course, we can solve this problem. We can move people who don't have a home into many of the homes that don't have people. How do we do it? Okay, let's have a real serious discussion of that. Well, let's throw out a few ideas. Here's a simple one. I've mentioned it before. The city sells about $200 million worth of bonds every 2 years. Best I can determine, they've never sold one for housing for poor people. No reason that they haven't done it, except they haven't chosen to do it. So let's mount a campaign to have the mayor and the city council include in their next bond issue money to rehab vacant houses. It's good for the neighborhoods. It's good for employment. And we can find, and Tony can tell you better than I, plenty of folks who are on the streets and in shelters who have skills, people who are carpenters and painters and drywall hangers and so forth. And it's a really good idea to put them to work doing something productive. They can rehab their own housing. What an idea. Now, that's just number one. Let's look at what the state and the city school system did for schools, right? They are getting about $2 billion to reconstruct the schools. Well, with $2 billion, we could house, oh, something over 35,000 households by rehabbing vacant houses. Now, Housing for Hope, a national group that does rehab, says they can do rehab for about $50,000 a unit. Now, the city says it costs more like $100,000. I'm not in the construction field. I don't know. But even if it were $100,000 and we could get $2 billion like the school system did, we have a significant start at converting blighted housing into vibrant housing. But we need the city to go with us to the state and develop the political will to do it. Why not? Then, of course, there's the federal issues. We've had this campaign to change the mortgage interest deduction to a mortgage tax credit. And that simple change in language could provide close to $1 billion of money that every jurisdiction would get, and we'd use that money to put people who need houses into houses that need people.
So before Rachel, you jump back in, what is that? I mean, I think we need to find what we're talking about here before I go back to some of the things you just said. What does it mean to go from a mortgage deduction, which those of us who own homes and live in a home that we're still paying for use as to kind of help our income taxes as opposed to a tax credit?
Oh, sure. We can explain that. There's a white paper that somebody wrote that explains it pretty well. It's on the website of the Homeless Persons Representation Project. You can read it for free. What it means is currently the mortgage interest deduction is the second largest tax break in the United States, exceeded only by corporations not having to pay taxes on benefits that they provide to their staff. And by the way, the benefits keep getting cut, but that's a show for another time. So when you buy a home, you don't have to pay taxes on the interest that you're paying on your mortgage, right? That seems pretty straightforward. Unfortunately, many people, most homeowners, half of the homeowners can't take it because you have to itemize your deductions in order to take it. So a large majority of those benefits goes to wealthy people. It's a very poor way to redistribute income.
But let me just say, just push back a little bit. But a lot of those deductions, though, and the reason you probably have pushback on that just as a political question, goes to regular middle class people who can itemize.
Ah, well,
right? And so, I mean, I'm not wealthy, but I itemize.
Wow, but you dress nicely.
That's because these clothes were bought a while back, but thank you very much. And not always, but anyway, I itemize. We itemize and take the deduction every year. We're hardly wealthy people. You know what I'm saying? So, a lot of people who are just regular middle-class folks take those deductions and they live on those. They look forward to that. They need that.
And middle-class folks would still get a benefit from this. All this really does is convert the deduction to a tax credit. Now, the difference between a deduction and a tax credit is the deduction reduces your income. The tax credit reduces your taxes. So the tax credit comes off your bottom line. The deduction comes off your top line. But there's a bill in Congress that would make this simple change the tax deduction to a tax credit. Middle-class people wouldn't be affected at all. They'd still get to take off the amount they owe to the federal government. They could subtract the amount.
Which they can't do now. Interest.
Right. You can't do that now. You subtract it now from your income. With this change, you'd subtract it from the amount you owe. You'd still get the benefit of buying a home. This is not okay. intended.
So what would that do? What would that do to deal with the issue that Tony began talking about, which is moving people into abandoned homes and changing the nature of homelessness and poverty?
It would essentially allow middle class and working class folks to take advantage of owning a home and reducing their tax burden, but wealthy people would get a smaller tax credit. They would.
So what's it got to do with housing in Baltimore?
Okay. Well, the difference between the amount that the federal government doesn't get now because of the mortgage interest deduction and the amount that the federal government would get because of the tax credit, i.e. rich people paying more taxes, that difference is converted into grants to states and cities, grants to produce housing for folks who can't afford it. It's a brilliant idea.
So you were about to say what, Rachel? I'm sorry, I mean to let no. keep pushing Jeff, but I wanted to get that on the table. What were you going to say, Rachel?
Well, I mean, just in response to your question, Mark, the reason that this idea sort of, I think, sounds so challenging mm-hmm. is because the city – our city politics, our city has not valued the problems of the poor and the dispossessed. So it seems like this Herculean task to actually take our vacant housing and transform it into productive use for affordable housing for those in need, the homeless, for those that can't afford housing. But what we know is that actually jurisdictions and places across the country are doing just that. I'd like to talk about that. But before, you know, we go into some examples, I think we're at this crisis point right now where we don't really have an alternative. I mean, we see that this isn't just a problem of the 4,000 plus people experiencing homelessness on any given night. It's a problem. It's pervasive. This affordability crisis is pervasive across the city, and we can see that in our rolls of people going to rent court every single day. It's 150,000 people over the year in Baltimore City. We see that in our foreclosure rate. So Maryland has some of the highest. It is like the second highest state in terms of foreclosures.
Foreclosure. The Republican candidate says that to Lieutenant Governor Brown all the time now in their debates, yes.
And I think when we talk about affordable housing, we have to talk about what we really mean by that and what our demand specifically is. Housing our neighbors and the Housing as a Human Right Roundtable is demanding. We know that if we want to transform vacant housing back to use, that's great, because vacant housing has profound effects on communities. But also, what type of housing do we want? We want housing that's actually going to stay affordable and build stability in communities. So we feel like, what is the tool that we can use to create that stability? I mean, one thing that we've been studying as the roundtable and Housing Our Neighbors is this community land trust. And it's a form of permanently affordable housing that actually promotes community control of housing. So a nonprofit owns the land and makes decisions about the housing on the land. And so, you know, there's all these, I think, values attached to this concept of affordable housing that are essential and are important to consider as we craft our campaign. We don't want to recreate the same inequality that our housing system has manifested and developed. We want a new system, and we want a third way of housing. And we feel like the community land trust is one tool that can get us there. But we also have to start thinking about. And seriously, we have to start putting communities at the forefront of those decisions.
So, folks, join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. I want to know your thoughts. Some of you have been homeless. who listen to this program. Many people have had people in their families who have gone through living somewhere and then losing their place. Many of people who listen to this program, those of us have put people up in our homes because they're in transition and have nowhere to go as they try to get to the next place. And these are ideas. Do you think that our leadership in the city and our political leadership around is creative enough to think about how we resolve these issues? Could things like a bond that one of our guests talked about, or a community land trust, another one of our guests talked about, could those things actually put people to work, which is the underlying issue here? If we have houses in Baltimore and put 10,000 men and women to work, let's say, for pull a number out of our hat, what would that do to change if you had 10, 12,000 more Baltimoreans working in construction, from being laborers to carpenters to whatever else is needed? Is that realistic to you? Small business people, what do you think? What do you think about this change from our tax deductions, our mortgages that we take, to the idea of a tax credit? 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on that, and your thoughts on what we should be saying to our city council members, our mayor, our president of city council, people who run housing. 410-319-8888. Please join us with your ideas. We want to hear what you have to say about all of this. So, Tony, let me bring back in. How do you think, just from your level of work on the ground all the time, how does it realistically change things?
Well, I know when I'm out there doing canvassing with Housing Our Neighbors and I'm talking to the people in the neighborhood and asking them what they would like to see, one thing that echoes through everybody is we would like to stay in our community. We're always talking about new developments and building affordable homes. Well, people right now are struggling to live where they are. So, and I don't understand why you should have to move out of your community. We are pumping billions of dollars in the inner harbor. Why can't some of those money come back into the inner city? Because it goes back to what you were saying. The city looks like a bomb hit it. When we were out canvassing in Alderley Park, we identified over 300 homes without people. The city, 42% of that, the city counted, don't consider them vacant. When we out there canvassing, we just don't look at the building. We actually look inside, Mark. We actually walk around the back. We look at the foundation. These homes are in very good condition. And the idea of putting people to work, well, there it is. You have a homeless population, and you have people without jobs. Why not bring the two together? And one thing they would get a skill that they can use later on in life, and they can get housing that's much needed in Baltimore. The housing crisis that we're experiencing here right now is, unless we do something now, we can't wait, because the problem is only going to get worse. The longer we wait, the more problems we're going to have. You have elderly people living on the street. You have our disabled, our mentally ill. You have our children living out here on the street. So I'm a firm believer in the housing first method. You know, get people off the street, put them in a stable housing, and watch them turn their lives around. You know, you got people saying, well, homeless people really don't want to work. Yes, we do. I'm in a shelter with guys and girls who work every single day. Minimum wage is not going to get them affordable housing. They are willing to work. I'm willing to work. All we're looking for is a place to call home at the end of the day, like everybody else. Just given the opportunity to be a part of the American dream, so to speak. And as long as we keep all these neighborhoods boarded up, vacant, many of them are owned by private owners. We are housing our neighbors. We go online. We find out who owns them, how long they've been vacant, and why. You have people who are in the Melody Park neighborhood. They're so afraid of big developers that's going to come in and just force them out. We've seen it all over the city. I mean, billions of dollars. I'm so disappointed in the VA. They built a gate for $500,000 to keep people off the steps. That could have housed many people for a year.
At the War Memorial Building.
Okay, yeah, right, Plaza. Right, yeah, right, they right. built that $500,000 gate, they say, to protect the integrity of the building. Well, after 8 years, I never protected a building. My job was to protect the people. When we're out there doing canvassing and we're talking to the people in the neighborhood, they are saying, why y'all build a charter school when y'all couldn't repair the school in our neighborhood that our children go to? Why are y'all building these new so-called affordable homes across town, and y'all not doing anything right in our community. People who own homes in their neighborhood would never get the value out of their neighborhood as long as they got all these abandoned homes all surrounding them. They can never resell their home because of these things. But, yeah, I mean, if you were living underneath a bridge and it's 32 degrees outside, you're going to seek shelter somehow. If there's raining outside, you're going to need to find shelter somewhere. And yes, there are a lot of people who are moving into these abandoned homes, right or wrong, illegal or not. People are trying to save their lives. If you keep people out here on the street right now, there are going to be a lot more people who are going to become ill or even die living out here on the street. So, yeah, we can come up with these creative ideas. Community Land Trust is one that would keep homes affordable. Housing First Method will get people off the street and get them the help that they need right away. So, yeah, I mean, we got to get creative. We cannot keep doing business as usual. We can't keep giving billionaires billions of dollars to build
Let me open the phones here and get some folks in this conversation. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on this. We're going to come back to more specifics after the break. But your thoughts at 410-319-8888. Melvin in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Yes.
Good morning, Melvin.
Good morning. I just wanted to comment that the reason that we have these problems and they're continuing to grow, and there's just no real sincerity about fixing them, you know. Any of these programs that you do get in, it's a catch-22. So it doesn't really give you any real incentive or any real benefit. Just like, for instance, the disabled bus pass. When you look into it, it can't be based on financial need. Well, that's the only thing it will provide. It gives you a discount for riding a bus for someone who doesn't have the economic means to do so. But qualifying for if there's a financial need is not one of the basis in order to obtain the bus pass. So where is the sincerity in that? You know, it's not a sincere effort to help people who are actually financially disabled and they can't use the public transportation. So that's what I'm just basically saying that there's just no real sincerity in attacking these problems. So they're going to continue to grow.
Mel, thanks for those thoughts. Huh? You were going to say what? To Melvin?
I was going to say that, Melvin, thank you for raising that issue. In more civilized countries where there's a real sense of community and public spirit, public transportation is either free or extremely inexpensive. But here, it isn't, primarily because people with upper incomes, people who run the city, don't ride it, don't know what it's like to wait for a bus in the rain for an hour. Yes, Rachel?
I think it just speaks to this greater question of our public services. So, Melvin, that's a great point you mentioned, like public transportation is one of a number of public services that we see constantly being threatened or at risk. So we have the Charm City Circulator. We're considering charging for that now.
Right.
We've got our public services like rec centers, fire stations, health and health care as a public service. You know, our basic rights, our basic needs – we only see being cut and privatized, and the people sort of most negatively
are affected by all this.
Yes, thank you. Yeah.
So we have to take a quick break here. But Harmony just called in. Harmony, please hold on. We have to take a quick legal ID break and have a little news at the top of the hour. I'm going to come right back to your question. So please don't hang up. And folks, join her at 410-319-8888. We're going to break with Killer Queen by Queen. On this day, Queen became the first rock act to receive the official seal of approval in Iran. They don't have any taste either. We'll be right back.
What I like. Chantilly lace and a pretty face and a ponytail hanging down, wiggling a walk and a giggle.
Coming back with Chantilly Lace by the Big Bopper, born on this day in 1930. And I meant to say at the end of the last thing that the interesting part about Queen was that they got the official seal approval from Iran because Fred McMurray, in honor of Fred Mercury's Iranian heritage, who is part of Queen. So we are here with Jeff Singer, Tony Simmons, Rachel Cutler, talking about homelessness in Baltimore. The article was in the Atlantic Monthly about why we can't use the vacants in Baltimore to begin to house people who don't have housing. And that's what we're wrestling with today. What are your thoughts? At 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. Log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. 410-319-8888. And let's go to Harmony in Baltimore. You're on the air.
Hi.
Good morning.
I just want to say I feel so privileged and thankful to be able to hear the show today because it's an issue that is really close to my heart. There are so many homeless people, not only here, I'm from New York, but also in New York, and it just hurts my heart whenever I see them, elders, veterans on the streets. And I live in West Baltimore. I live on Lafayette Square, and I don't even know why I moved to Baltimore. I'm like, what am I doing here? Oh, my God. And so you all have really materialized what I've been feeling like. We need to be doing something. I want to join one of your organizations because we really need to be doing something. This is not acceptable, and it's going to get worse. You're perfectly right. It has to get worse. It's not going to get better.
Not without.
So I really am thankful. Thank you for doing this show, and thank you for the people who are participating, and you're really expressing some important.
Harmony, thanks so much.
Human.
Pardon, what were you saying? I'm sorry, Harmony, go ahead.
Thank you. Okay.
Well, and we're going to tell you how to get in touch with these groups, I get right now. Go ahead. And we'll put it on our website as well.
You can contact Rachel Cutler at 443-745-745. 8950. You can come out surveying with us. We survey on Wednesdays. Please come join us at Housing Our Neighbors, and you'll get a firsthand look at what goes on here in Baltimore.
How do you contact Housing Our Neighbors?
Well, yeah, come to Harmony. Thank you so much for your interest. Come to a Housing Our Neighbors meeting. First and third Saturdays, we meet at Emmanuel Episcopal Church. It's on Cathedral and Reed. And that's at 12 o'clock, first and third Saturdays at noon. We've been going out doing this vacant housing survey as a project to build our own understanding of what's going on with vacant housing and also to have a better understanding of why we have so many vacants, who owns the vacants, why they are vacant. So that's Housing Our Neighbors, and Housing Our Neighbors is one of the human rights committees that works with United Workers, and you can find us at unitedworkers.org. We have a Housing as a Human Right roundtable that convenes faith, labor, and community groups across the city that are interested in the housing issue, and we've been studying and also building a campaign to bring permanently affordable housing to our city, and that, again, is nonprofits, it's community developers, it's people experiencing homelessness all coming together to build this campaign, and we would love to
and
have
we'll
you.
Put these things on our Facebook page and on our website, but you can go to onebaltimoreunited@gmail.com. There's all kinds of other numbers. We'll get you all those contacts so you can get involved in the groups, and if you want to be involved, to put it out there. So 410-319-8888 is the number here. You know, I had an email exchange with a friend who's been very prominent in these activities, and it was a private email, so I won't get into names of people. But it came out of a piece that David question and answer with David Barinsky, who was in City BizList. Come Home Baltimore, it's called. And he is a private developer who is developing houses in East Baltimore in the Oliver neighborhood. To bring people into that neighborhood and find investment opportunities to buy homes. It's part of, I think, the overall arching program of Mayor Stephen Rawlings Blake to bring 10,000 new families to Baltimore. So, and I don't oppose that. I think that's probably a very important thing to do, to bring 10,000 new families to Baltimore. And I think that we need to do that to invigorate the city. But I wrote to a friend about this back and forth, and one of the things that I wrote to that person was that I thought that that it's a complex problem, but what I want to know is what happens to the people who live in that community now. What happens to the renters in those communities, and what happens if you gentrify a community and people are kind of pushed out because they can no longer afford the rents? The response was, it's a complex problem. It's important to distinguish between homeowners and renters. The former are trapped with low-value assets. Gentrification increases the value of their primary asset, and property tax cap limits the increase in property taxes, plus their neighborhood becomes cleaner and safer. Renters get the benefit of the latter, not the former. On the other hand, renter mobility is very high in poor neighborhoods. How about rent control in these limited neighborhoods? That's an A. We can talk about rent control as a way of keeping people in homes as you gentrify a neighborhood and change things. And the other thing that I wrote, that's true, rent control is one solution, but that would allow income renters to remain in those neighborhoods. There would have to be a partnership between the city and the building owners to maintain those properties to certain standards, and the city might explore how low-income buildings might become co-ops, so you can take them over and it can be co-opt buildings rather than owned by private people to keep them up. And can you? And what about the people who live there who own those homes in poor neighborhoods? Do you freeze the value of their homes at a certain level so they can remain in their neighborhood and get low interest loans to fix up their houses as well? So this is not, but the problem is, I think the way we want to fix it is to fix it with come home Baltimore gentrification, without thinking of the ramifications and what we might do to make a better Baltimore.
Good. Couple of comments. One
Singer.
Is the mayor's initiative to bring 10,000 new families into Baltimore may be a laudable one, but why don't we complement it with an initiative to house 10,000 current Baltimore families who are ill-housed or who are experiencing homelessness?
Yep.
And one of our deep frustrations is the city of Baltimore, to my knowledge, and I've been here for 40 years, has not had a plan to create a sufficient supply of housing for the 86,000 households in Baltimore with incomes below $25,000 per year.
And how many people live in Baltimore?
Slightly over 600,000.
So 86,000 families, let's say, times four at a minimum, perhaps?
Three and a half to four, yeah.
Right? Let's just say
it's a lot of people.
It's a lot of people. So that's a huge number of people in this city that do not have houses. That's close to half the people of Baltimore who are housing insecure, who live in this city.
Close to that. Mm-hmm. Close to that.
Or
close to half the city.
By there.
Right. In the city are housing insecure. Not homeless, but not sure if they can remain in their home because of the rent and work and cost.
If we only began with an initiative for 10,000, because we're bandying about the number of 10,000, if we only began with 10,000, what a wonderful change we could make in our city with employment opportunities, with fixing up blighted neighborhoods and homes. It would make a sea change. But there's no such initiative to my knowledge, and there's no such plan. You know, the city's now doing a housing lottery for subsidized housing vouchers, and they're going to put 25,000 people on a list. Of those, 1,000 per year, or perhaps 6,000 over the course of...
Let me stop you there.
Yes, yes.
So if we have 25,000 people who would be on this list for vouchers, and you said this earlier, Tony, that it was just not enough to take care of other people's needs. So let's say you wanted to take care of 25,000 people over the next 18 months, over the next 24 months, over whatever that number is. How would we do it? How would you begin to ensure that the 25,000 families that need secure housing get it in less than, what's the number you said, 20 years? 10 years they want to do this?
Oh, I didn't say a particular.
I thought you were saying that people on that list, it's going to take.
Oh, the people on that list, the list will last for 6 years.
6 years, okay.
6 years.
So let's say you didn't want to wait 6 years.
Sorry.
How would you not wait 6 years and get it done?
Well, next year we'd sell a bond and we'd get $100 million and we start putting people to work to rehab vacant houses. The city has $22 million that they got in their bank settlement for the way the banks were dealing with poorer homeowners. The city got $22 million. They're not using a penny of it to create more housing for poor people. They're using it to tear down vacant houses. That's shameful.
The $22 million we got in that settlement.
Yes.
Are being used to tear down houses, not build houses.
Yes. Not build or rehab houses. That's right.
And that's not to say that some homes don't need to be torn down.
Some of the
shells
do have to go.
Absolutely. But when we talk about our human rights principles of equity, mm-hmm. you know, we feel very strongly that the folks that the issues that need to be prioritized are those most in need, the issues, the people most in need, creating affordable housing. Can I just go back to one thing you said earlier, Mark, about this question of instability? You know, I think often when we look at development and what displacement looks like, you know, like the response that you read was very technical and speaking about sort of like well, I just want to tell you like a quick story about instability that, you know, Tony was talking about our canvas before. We go out and we talk to East Baltimore residents every single week when we do a community canvas to actually hear from folks about their experiences of vacant housing and what they'd like to see with housing. And, you know, one gentleman invited me into his house. His name was James, and he retired. He's disabled now, and he only receives his pension money from his union job. He's been a renter his whole life. His house was very intricately like decorated. He clearly had loved his home. He felt very like that was his life. His life was in his home. He lives in a part of McKeldry Park that is close to Johns Hopkins, and the properties around his home were for sale. And he nearly, you know, told me the story about, you know, he was in his 80s and he doesn't think he struggles every month just to make it on his fixed income in his house. So he is experiencing this extreme amount of instability and stress. That's the type of resident you want in your neighborhood, these people who care about their communities, who care about their home and want to see their homes and their communities strong. And yet this sort of development to bring in this sort of development without consideration for the community ends up displacing and creating instability in the community. We want to see the sort of development that actually promotes, communities in control of that process mm-hmm. and creates stability. And we think the way that can happen is through communities at the helm.
So I'm going to come back to Tony here, but let me get a phone call here, Tony, and let you respond if the phone call comes in at 410-319-8888. Ray in Baltimore, you're in. You're on.
Oh, my.
Good morning, Ray.
Real quick.
Sure.
Let me just plug this show and public radio. This discussion that you all have been having today is, I mean, it's a tour de force of why we need public radio. And I'm just terrified that one day soon we may not have it. You're never going to have these discussions on radio stations that are totally commercial based. And while I am extremely enthused at this discussion, I would just request from all of the callers, this is why we have to donate to all of our various public radio stations in this nation, because our democracy is literally at stake, and this is one of the few voices we have. Our governors and mayors should be commissioning the colleges and universities in Maryland to come up with a vision of what our city should look like. We have schools of architecture here. We have schools of urban planning. And I would commission these schools. You don't even have to pay them. Can you imagine the excitement of graduate students that would actually be planning what the city should look like, a livable wage? Because right now, in order to buy a home in Baltimore on minimum wage, you'd have to work 138 hours a week, and the Atlantic
right.
article cites that.
Right.
So, it comes down to leadership and who is going to take the helm of proposing something that wouldn't cost anything for these schools, for these universities to come up with a holistic vision, which includes the drug problem, the homelessness, mental health problem, but an architectural plan that would revitalize our cities. It could be done.
Look, Ray, I think
need the leadership.
Your idea, I think, is a phenomenal one. I'm glad you called in with that. Do tell people to contribute to WEA and public radio if you want to keep this stuff on the air. I agree with you completely. I worry about the same thing. But I think that what you said about college, we raised this on the show the other week in a similar conversation. When you have people like, when you have Micah's school in architecture, you have the School of Design and Architecture here at Morgan State University, you have other institutions that could feed into that. This could be the projects that graduate students, undergraduates work on, how to redesign a city, working in communities with Tony Simmons and all the Tony Simmons in Baltimore, with them to figure out how they want the communities to look and come up with a plan that works, how to change our neighborhoods, how to make them look a certain way, make people feel they can be in a certain way. So I think this idea is good.
Yeah, I agree with it. And housing our neighbors in the round table, we have a vision, and we'd be more than happy to sit down with the mayor's office and show them and demonstrate our vision on what the city should look like. Mark, one thing about this city is taking too long. They've been dragging their feet. I found out at the inclusionary hearing that the city of Baltimore only built 25 affordable houses in the last 7 years.
25
through the inclusionary housing.
Through inclusionary housing.
Bill.
25?
7 years. And it's taken the Housing Authority of Baltimore City 11 years to open up the Section 8 program. The Journey Home says it's going to take 10 years to get people off the street. I mean, we're stuck on a decade. People do not have 10 years to wait. We should include neighborhoods. Let's go into the neighborhoods and ask them, what would you like to see your neighborhood looks like?
So I have a thought here before we have to end the discussion. I'll bring our next discussion in, but and let you all have a quick closing thoughts because we do have to move to our next group coming into the studio. I mean, what about the idea the next mayoral election is, what, 2015 or 20?
2016.
So why shouldn't there be a campaign to put, let's say, for argument's sake, to put this on the table, the question of the city, people of Baltimore want the city to have a $200 million bond to rebuild the housing and put people to work as kind of a citywide campaign to gain momentum, to get people to start thinking about it. And then they would have to debate it because you'd be getting people to sign a petition to put it on the debate. Then you can have this debate and really push it. Of course, you get a lot of pushback, but that's the nature of existence. But I mean, isn't that one of the ways things happen? I mean, we can demonstrate, we can do all that stuff, but that kind of stuff seems to be concretely change the discussion if it was actually out there.
Hear, hear. Let's organize.
I agree.
Why don't you start? We'll start here right now.
You know,
it's time to do it, I think.
Join us at the round table.
In 1979, some of your listeners might remember this, we, the citizens of Baltimore, voted for rent control.
Right.
Right?
That's right.
We won. We won the vote
right.
for rent control. Then a court overturned it, said the city couldn't do it by referendum, and the city decided not to do it by legislation and charter amendment. But we could create a platform for a livable Baltimore, a really livable Baltimore, not just nice places downtown for yuppies,
right.
but an entire city in which we haven't taken all of the money out of the neighborhoods and put in the inner harbor, which we've done. Anyone who wants to call in and challenge that, happy to debate it. A really livable Baltimore for all of our residents. Let's make that platform.
I think that all these ideas are important. I mean, there has to be something concrete if we're going to make the change. I mean, I'm one who has spent a lot of his life in demonstrations, getting arrested, standing up to that stuff. But sometimes you have to take moves that are beyond just standing outside with your signs, but pushing the issue so you push a larger discussion.
Mm-hmm. And we're going to get practice at doing just that, standing up for a platform that actually puts families and communities first. That's this Monday. It's the One Baltimore United. Did you want to talk about it?
I'll say it, but go ahead.
Don't mean to steal your spot. Go ahead.
This is your stuff. I'm just holding it in my hand. We can both do it. Go ahead. Tell them about One Baltimore.
Wait, one, two, three, One Baltimore?
Tell me about what's going on Monday.
Okay. So faith, labor, community groups are uniting across the city to stand up for an agenda that puts Baltimore families and the needs of Baltimore City residents at the forefront. So there's we're meeting. There's a rally at City Hall at 4:30. And the idea is that, you know, we're standing up for five core principles around public resources, affordable housing, better education.
Quality education, good paying jobs, permanent affordable housing, safe neighborhoods, public services. One Baltimore Monday, October 27th, gathering at McKeldin Square, which is at Light and Pratt. Light and Pratt at 4 p.m., so don't get hit by a car. Light and Pratt at 4 p.m., march to City Hall for a 4:30 rally at 100 North Holiday Street. One Baltimore is in a coalition of community, faith, and labor organizations standing together for One Baltimore, where elected officials put Baltimore families first. And that's this Monday, October 27th, 4 p.m. gathering McKeldin Square. The rally is at City Hall at 4:30, and you can call United Workers at 410-230-1998 for more information, or just post, just show up. Just be there.
Yes. Come on out. I mean, Baltimore, we got to speak out. Is this your opportunity to come out and voice your opinion and let city council and the mayor's office know how you feel about your community? Yeah, we got to be able to, we can't sit behind our closed doors and expect somebody else to do the work for us. If you're tired of what's happening in your community, here's your opportunity to come out and join us and speak out and let them know that you don't want to see vacancies in your neighborhood. You're tired of seeing your neighborhood fall apart. So you have an opportunity on Monday to come out and voice your opinion and let the city and the government know how you feel. Remember, your elected officials are your employees, not the other way around. So if you don't like what they're doing, well, Election Day is coming soon.
And maybe there'll be a ballot question on the in that election saying, we need to have money to fix housing up, put people to work, and create a new Baltimore.
Here, here.
That's what it takes.
Permanently affordable housing.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. This has been great. Jeff Singer is founder and former executive director of Healthcare for the Homeless. Tony Simmons, you just heard, housing advocate, member of Housing Our Neighbors. Rachel Cutler, leadership organizer with the United Workers Housing Campaign and a member of Housing Our Neighbors. And the rally is this Monday, October 27th. 4 o'clock gathering at McKeldin Square, Light and Pratt, and the rally will be at City Hall at 4:30 this coming Monday, October the 27th. One Baltimore, we stand for a better Baltimore for all. Good to have the three of us. Three of not us, you. Us, yes, but have three of you with us. That's what I'm trying to say.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mark.
Good to have you all here. Alternative Roots is coming back. We're going to talk with them and hear about that in just a moment. We're going to go out and take this brief break. And you got, who is that? It's James Brown. Try Me, his album Live at the Apollo, recorded on this day in 1962 on his own. The man said, we're not paying for it. He said, I don't care. I'll do it myself. James Brown, Live at the Apollo, Try Me.